Hello, this is Lean Jones calling from Mother Russia. This is Rock and Roll Bet. So hello, and welcome to another Rock and Roll. A quick change this week. We've got no Ryan Worley, so I quickly needed a Valleys boy exiled to England, double quick time to step into the hot seat and join me in Austin. It's a man still playing rugby in any position he's asked at 48 years old, so just 3 years younger than Johnny Sexton. Gavin Thomas is with me. How are you doing, Gav?
Yeah, very well. I feel a bit like I did this weekend, so I offered to play rugby for a club other than my own, and I'm used to wambling about a bit in the second row and not doing a lot. And ended up playing an entire half at blindside. Turns out I'm not built for running anymore. And this is a bit like the same kind of thing. I'm actually going to have some rugby knowledge this evening, which is a worry for me, but we'll see how it goes.
I was never built for running. Don't worry about it. That's on the age thing. So our guest for this week, I've brought him on to see if he'll finally come good and buy a round of drinks for everyone who's on the podcast like he promised. Or if I'll upset him first by calling him the wrong name too many times. So it's Ali, not Avi Worthy. How are you doing, Ali?
Are you all right?
Yeah, it's not too bad. I would have had yesterday on with you as well, but I think he's whining and dining Phil Steele or something, isn't he? So,
I said he's got no time for us small timers anymore.
It's him and Steely now all the way, like Thelma and Louise. So we've got a lot to get on with. We missed one recording, so we haven't recorded since before Australia. I was a real day straight in. We'll do a quick try. How's your week been so far, boys?
I might as well say, yeah, it's been all right. I think I played some rugby, been to work. That's pretty much the same as every week for me.
Well, since we've come on, I've done the Wales-Australia game, which I somehow ended up doing corporate in the posh seats. And then I felt like I was some sort of side act in like a travelling show with a posh bloke that was on the table with me who thought my Valleys accent and the fact I was a bit loud after a few drinks. And then he was like, oh, you should do a podcast. And I said, do a podcast. And he said, I want to produce it. I want to produce your podcast. And I was so drunk at that point, I didn't go, yeah, no worries. I went, follow me on Twitter. So don't know who that guy was and no idea what's happening. Then I done Sam Fender on Thursday, which was another one where we had to put off. And then I spent the best part of 9 hours in A&E yesterday with Emily, who had an accident in school. And that's an eye-opener. That's an eye-opener. That was a Wednesday night. God help what it's like on a Saturday. It was absolute mayhem and madness. So I'm glad to be back in a bit of normality.
Interesting to call this normality, I would
say. This is normality to me now. Sat down talking to two people I've never met in person about rugby over Zoom in what's essentially a glorified greenhouse is now normality for me. So we'll dive straight in. Important news that came out this week is the obvious place to start. There was a survey completed about everyone's favourite Christmas chocolate and celebrations one. How are we feeling about it? I knew this is where I think the age divide could have come in. Gav, you instantly look disgusted.
Look, if people aren't repping Quality Street at Christmas, they're not celebrating Christmas. It's as simple as that. I'm celebration is fine. Do I really want a tiny Mars bar? No, not really. I don't want a large Mars bar. Why do I want a tiny one?
Remember when they brought out Mars fun size?
Yeah, vaguely, yeah.
Yeah, remember when they were like, do you know what would be more fun than this? Like a full-size Mars bar. That would be really fun if I had a full bar of chocolate rather than this piece of shit.
That's why I don't care about celebrations. So, it's all your favourite. Well, not really. I like a bounty, but that's about it. The rest of them, it's okay.
I'm going to send all my bounties to you then because I can't stand them.
what's your favourite thing? What's your favourite, Ali? Where are we going Christmas?
I'm particularly with my wife's family. They snack on everything, so it's quite. So you get loads of Quality Street. Personally, I love Heroes, mainly because it's the one that'll eat the majority of them.
Heroes,
I'm a big fan of flavoured chocolate.
Heroes were in the poll quite rightly last. I no time for Heroes. That's like celebrations, but worse. I'm with Gav. Quality Street or Roses, I give. The over 50s, the over 50 vote, they did vote Quality Street top, which, you know, they voted in the Tories and they fucked us on Brexit, but they know Topper.
Well, they give something.
Yeah, you can't take that away from them. They're trying to give something back. They at least know they love a little green one and a big purple one. And I'm going to finish this conversation on they love a big purple.
The green ones are the worst ones, though.
The green ones are the best ones. Oh. That's noisette. Is that how you say it? I've never heard anyone say it out loud. Is that how it's
It's hazelnut puree.
Yeah.
I get excited about hazelnut puree, apart from the French, maybe.
Well, it's just Nutella in a triangle. What's the matter with you?
A lot.
I've got enough time in the pod for that.
Now we'll move on to some real rugby news. So we'll kick off on the depressing story of the week. And then I was going to say we'll build up from here, but it's all fucking depressing. There's no good news this week. It's nearly Christmas. Is that good news? We've got, as we speak, still quite a few players stuck in South Africa. We've got the... how are we pronouncing this? How are we pronouncing this new variant? As someone who doesn't... who reads news and doesn't watch it.
Well,
Omicron?
I always thought it was Omicron, but apparently the emphasis should be on the me, according to some radio DJ, so, you know, I usually ignore that, whatever they say.
Well, if that's what Bruno Brooks says... All right, well... Dr. Fox, is he a real doctor when he's saying we're going to Omicron? So, yeah, obviously, we've got the new variant. The teams flew out ready to play their games. Then everyone put South Africa on their red list, which I think is just a natural reaction to Razzie. They just didn't want Razzie over here again. So I think that's where the no-fly came from. As we're talking, I think the Scarlets, they're definitely in Europe.
They're in Belfast, I believe.
They're in Belfast now, are they? Because they travelled back with Zebra, who stayed in Italy. Then Scarlets went on to Belfast. Munster are now back in Ireland, is that right?
From what I've seen, it's the majority of the squad are back in, and they've just left anyone who's having to isolate through COVID. And so they're at least back on home soil. So it's 10 days isolation, but it's a 10-day isolation period a lot sooner than anyone from Cardiff's going to...
Yeah,
vaccine anyone.
Well, that was the thing, because Cardiff were meant to fly. We'd be recording this on Thursday night, so they were meant to fly back this morning. That's now not happened because the government gave away the flight space that they were using to fly over in. So they're now hoping to fly home tomorrow. The difficulty being they've got a European Cup game next week.
Yep.
If nothing ever, I won't stick the boot into anyone yet. Oh, I missed out as well. The Blues made the statement yesterday, which, you know, there's so much salt in the Dead Sea that people float.
Yeah.
It was fucking saltier than that. It was so salty, the way that they worded it and the people that they thanked and then the people that they didn't thank.
Because... Matthew Morgan's gone absolutely full in, hasn't he? Matthew Morgan is pulling no punches or kicks or anything.
Well, Wally sent me the Matthew Morgan tweet first thing this morning. And it was deleted already. It was within minutes of him sending it, he had deleted it. It was screenshot and sent to me.
Yeah.
And then it's been spread out. Because I had that moment where I'm like, do I share this? Is it a bit unfair on him? Like, I got to be honest, I'm on Matthew Morgan's side. Except for having to go at the URC, because I'm not really sure what they could have done any differently. They just organised the fixtures. I don't think they've got any control over borders.
But I think that's the challenge, isn't it, now? Because this is clearly a terrible thing, and I do feel for the Cardiff lads who are stuck out there. But the challenge is now, there are people out there who don't like the URC as a concept. And, you know, having a competition in South Africa in the middle of a global pandemic, probably not ideal. but that is the best deal available to us. But now this is going to give traction. And Matthew Morgan's tweet is going to give traction to those people who think we should be playing in some imaginary league in England that England has absolutely no interest in participating in. So, yeah, that's my problem with it, as much as a personal tragedy for the Cardiff lads.
Yeah. You wouldn't have had this problem if you were playing Ealing Trailfinders.
No, absolutely. If you're playing Amtill on a Wednesday evening, you know, you wouldn't have to worry about flights.
You can't play on a Wednesday evening. It's got to be Saturday, 3 o'clock on nothing, Gav.
Oh yeah, that's true. Come on,
you know, you don't want to mess with the, you don't want to mess with those the Cardiff purists.
Well, no, I discovered that when I had a goal to make a meme purely for the sake of humour, and then
I think you'll find they've signed some second rows.
Pulled apart for factual inaccuracy. Yeah, fine.
Yeah. With the things, yes, Destin shared the post with me, and it wasn't until I saw, AP Con, I'm going to completely butcher his name, but one of the South African...
Yeah, AP Con.
Big tweeters, he shared it. And, you know, my initial reaction was, well, it's a bit harsh having, you know, blaming everything on the URC. I mean, again, you know, they didn't design the variant, although, you know, I'm sure someone's going to say, oh, this was at the IRFU trying to...
But it's no coincidence it happened just after Leinster lost. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, but I mean, you look at the time. You know, it got deleted within minutes of posting it. So I mean, I don't know it. I don't believe it or not. As much as I absolutely love Cardiff, I'm not, you know, not in the pockets of everyone. So I don't know exactly what happens. But it looks like they got, you know, they about to leave the hotel, got told, oh no, the flight path's been closed. You've got to go. And then the Nipper's gone and said, you know, and like everyone here has had gut reaction, you know, and, you know, if you happen to be on Twitter, then you react on your tweet and say, oh, this is bullshit, you know. I said it about referee calls, and then in the time I've posted it and the replay comes up, I go, oh, wait a minute, no, that's fair, I'm a twat, which happens far too often. Thankfully, I'm usually quicker on the delete than any.
I had to do a retraction on this very subject last night because I did the big rant about Man U and how they were being treated differently to rugby teams. And then I actually read the article and they were being treated differently by the Swiss government. And I was like, right, sorry, before I rage tweet, I need to read articles. I get it. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
One.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, like, there's been a lot, you know, a lot of people have started giving them crap for it. And it's like, particularly the one, I mean, you know, and it's the same Twitter accounts that I get really offensive and angsty whenever anything goes wrong with South African rugby. I'm not going to go into accounts there. And then you're like, well, hang on, you're having to go at him for, you know, having a gut reaction and just wanting to blame someone because, you know, the stress. And, you know, one thing I didn't know is what his partner's expecting another child.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's got one kid and his partner's pregnant. So having got two kids myself, like your instinct is to be home. And so when something like this throws you, and, you know, there's already, what I really didn't like was the Blues have already made a statement about people's mental health and how players are struggling. And people can make stupid fucking statements like, oh, well, they're in a really swanky hotel in nice weather. Yeah, they're locked in one room. Like, it doesn't matter how nice your hotel is when you're locked in your bedroom, not able to leave, not even able to talk to people in other bedrooms. But it's horrific. It sounds awful.
I think it's a wider issue as well, isn't it? Because, you know, they've got a game against Toulouse coming up and the vast majority of their squad are going to have to be isolating. And then European Cup isn't being that helpful, really. So, well, you know, this is a date. That's the date you play it on. And now Cardiff, because they don't want it, I'm assuming there's financial penalties and there's TV, are now having to think about playing... guys play, you know, playing for Cardiff RFC in the Welsh Premiership, and that is a massive step up to playing Toulouse. It just, none of it feels fitted together particularly well. You know, as much as I will throw my hat into the ring and say Cardiff, if they want a really, really slow back row, I will be available to play against Toulouse. But
I think that's the one position Cardiff don't, no matter how many have to isolate, I don't think they're going to struggle.
This is the thing. They've said they've got 30-odd players unavailable, but there's a good chance of 28 of those playing the back row. So they might be unaffected anywhere else.
I did have a look because someone posted the, you know, the current registered squad, and there's easily a full 23 in there. all right, there are a few people, you know, they're more academy and they've only played in the Premiership. But you could argue they've probably had more rugby than the team who are currently isolating. Because, you know, most of them have only been training for the past 4 weeks because of the way the Irks decided to sort things, you know, with having proper international breaks. So there's a good chance they might actually be more match fit.
It's a step up, though, isn't it? You know, it's kind of Dan Fish at his best against Toulouse would not be high on my list of things to do. Dan Fish after he's retired. Probably not.
I was going to, while we're throwing out conspiracy TVs, maybe that's what this is. Maybe this is just a way to get Dan Fish back in a Cardiff shirt. I mean, this is how bad I feel for Cardiff during this edition. I'm actually calling them Cardiff. I'm not going to call them, I'm going to give them a break for a week.
I've called them the Blues twice, but
I will unintentionally do it.
No,
but when I remember, that. I'll call them Cardiff. It's mad. I think as well, like part of the problem comes from feeling like nobody's helping. Like whether the Welsh government's hands are tied, like Munster are home. And Ireland's been in it's been more locked down than bloody Peter Sutcliffe. Like that's so if they can come back, surely there's a way of working around it for them to get back in you.
I think as well, it's not just, you know, I know Matthew Morgan was raging at the Welsh government, but the Welsh government don't control British airspace and don't control commercial airlines and don't control lots of other things. And I know Sajid Javid was asked if he would help returning them and his answer was no. So, you know, I don't think it's a Welsh government thing. Whereas I think the Irish government have been just a bit more active in getting Munster back. And that's why I think Scarlets went to Belfast as well, because it was easier to get there to isolate than it was into Wales.
Because Scarlets, obviously, they flew into Dublin and then got a coach all the way from Dublin to Belfast. So, I mean, you know, apparently it's the most dingy, horrible, Premier Inn, that sort of running on skeleton crew. And it's like...
And Lenny Henry.
I mean, you know, I know they're from West Wales and that, but you know, even they're used to more mod cons than that.
Well, it was Samson Lee's birthday as well. And they couldn't even wish him happy birthday in person because Rob Evans FaceTimed him from another room, didn't he? And to wish him happy birthday. Which is
No, but none of us have to suffer and see Samson Lee in bed.
I thought I'd drawn the line when I seen his MySpace page. I thought that was the limit for me.
Was that not Bebo? Oh, it was certainly social media from the past.
Yeah, it was something that shows our age and how old we are compared to Samson Lee, which feels weird.
I'm older than most people, though, to be honest, Graf. So, you know, it's...
I hope when they ask Savage, what's his name?
Samson Lee.
No, the other guy, Javid.
Sergeant Javid.
I promise I'm only on my first can. I hope he just went, Cardiff, that's one club in a region, mate. I'm not helping them. Who are they going to play? Pontypridd? Nah, they'll have to tough it out. Don't get involved with that. If it was a regional side. It's all a bit shit. At the minute, it's fair to say. I think the Scarlets are talking about they're currently in talks with the Ospreys to bring in loan players, which maybe is just a way of doing this merger, under the table.
Yeah, have you seen the logo, the merged logo that was going around?
No.
John Hayes. And it almost looks like the Swansea City logo, but they sort of trimmed it into Scarlets and Ospreys colours.
Well, while we're talking Ospreys, a terrible, terrible week for the Ospreys, because I know we're all thinking, absolutely fuck all to do with Ulster. That song that came out, that they'd managed to tuck away, buried in a desert, like those old fucking video games of E.T. that they managed to get rid of. What the fuck was that all about? Have we all heard this? Yeah, I know we had the conversation. Paul Allen, Keith Allen's brother, who also did the Oh Mush Fuck Off song, you know, Oh Mush Fuck Off. That's apparently the same guy. And I'm pretty sure, buried in the back of my head somewhere, Paul Allen helped write World in Motion, didn't he? Because Keith Allen was involved in it.
Keith Allen wrote the words of the verses, because the chorus was already an existing song that New Order had knocking about.
Yeah, about ecstasy.
Yeah, about ecstasy, yeah.
Which is why, wasn't it originally called Ears for England? And they tried to get that past the FA, and it got quite far to the end before anyone went, hang on a minute. But what a way to slip if he was involved in, from World in Motion to that, whatever that Osprey song was. It's one of the worst things I've ever heard.
Rugby should not be around music other than traditional songs connected to rugby. Any rugby clubs who have their own songs are, well...
As I said, being a fully paid member of the Cardiff Blues Brothers, who are those nutters with the drums you hear at the Arms Park. I said, slightly different view, because some of them are quite funny, including the irony when we start chanting that the other team's scared of our scrum.
Well, I thought that was very scathing on the power of four, if I'm honest. I think you've been very harsh on a classic, a sporting classic, the power of four.
Have to sing that again?
I can't, honestly, I still don't know. I tried to learn it to the point of when I had to do it on Dodmaster, I tried to do Frankie Goes to Hollywood, The Power of Love, and just change love to four. And then I the headlights came on and I panicked, and then none of us did it. That was the best night I've had in a year. But that was not the highlight of it for me.
Listening to the songs of that evening were quite painful. You know, yours was probably one of the better ones. Robbie's still terrifies me to this day.
But mine just went tits up. Mine played a loud noise. And the boys have put so much effort in. The boys that I know in a band who were like, come on, we'll put this song together. And then it just came through as this loud... It wasn't meant to be death metal, but I mean, I can work with that, give it a chance.
It's like when we did, my mate was doing film and media in college and had to do like a for one of them, you had to do a music video or a documentary type thing. So we were in a band at the time, so we tried to play one, and we played quite proper, sickly indie, lovey dovey crap. And it came out sounding like thrash. Just because of how shit the mic recordings and stuff. So all you picked up was like all this feedback and stuff. And it's like, on the plus side, we then realised that the song sounded better that way when you couldn't actually hear what was being sung.
See, like I said, I've got two kids. So to me, that's like one of Mater's Tall Tales, which only fathers of a certain age. But Mater's Tall Tales, where there's a flavour on the drum kit, turns into a fucking great song. We've also got, I don't know if we can call in news, but for the past month, Wales Online are obsessed with people being drunk. So I'm going to throw it out here so we can have a general discussion on this. First of all, do we think it's the drunken pandemic that Wales Online pretended it is? And second of all, do we think this is anything new?
Well, no, is the answer to both those questions.
See,
I think my issue with it is, and I went to Twickenham to watch the Tonga game, and there were people around me who must have gone to the bar like five or six times they were in the game. And I can deal with drunk blokes, and I had my youngest son with me, and you know, I didn't feel that he was threatened or anything. It's just a bit annoying when you spend 85 quid for a ticket that I'm seeing the back of some bloke more than I am seeing, the rugby ball. And it's not ideal. In terms of the drunkenness at the ground, it does seem to be ramping up, though, a bit in terms of people who seem to be competitively drinking before they get into the stadium.
Well, this is my worry for one of the answers, right? Because people are saying, just stop serving drinks in the stadium after kickoff. But people are just going to drink more before kickoff. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. And also, the same people who seem to be saying we need to stop serving drinks are the same people who seem to be saying we need to get rid of the fourth test, and also the same people who seem to be saying we need to give more money to grassroots and regional rugby. Now, at some point, I'm not an accountant, but that don't match up.
No.
You can't have less money in and give more money out and still expect a ride. I know, and people will fucking drone on about a hotel, which there's issues there. But as well, the idea is that it's going to be self-sustaining and bring money into the WRU. So you can't complain about that. And it's the way that a lot of sports clubs and unions have gone as well.
Bar sales are vital for Twickenham. Or if you were laying people off through the pandemic, and that was because they weren't getting people through the door and paying, you know, £7 a pint. And that's the thing, you know, they need to be selling beer in the stadiums as part of their income stream.
Well, if you want to know how vital beer is to rugby teams, Newcastle Falcons players serve beer this week at Kingston because they had bar staff who couldn't make it in because of illness and because of COVID. So they had players who weren't playing serving behind certain bars so that they could keep the bars open. That's how important it is.
Well, absolutely.
It's a madness.
And culturally as well, it's always been part of the game, isn't it?
Yes.
I can remember going to watch Pontypool with my dad early 80s and having beer poured on my neck accidentally. Like, you know, it's I didn't get in Wales on Sunday or Wales Online or whatever it's called nowadays.
Yeah, Wales on Sunday, that's a throwback.
Sorry, it was last time I lived in Wales.
I was going to say, because I mean, get through uni, I worked in Wetherspoons of all places, yeah, and I'm part of the corporate devil. But, I mean, the markup we had on that, and we actually looked at how much markup you make and how much money you can make off a pint of beer. And it's, you know, if you only consider the cost of the beer itself, you can quite easily get 80 to 90% of that price can go towards paying the staff costs and everything like that, and you'll still have money left over to do everything else. Now, if you want less tests and you want less people to buy alcohol in pubs, there's a very simple solution. And that is whether you, like, if you're part of the Cardiff region, you don't like the fact that it's Cardiff, not Pontypridd, go support the Dragons. If you don't like the Dragon, you know, if you're in Gwent, you don't like Dragons, go support Cardiff. Support anyone else. Put money into the regions. And then the regions don't need as much money. And if the regions don't need as much money, then grassroots can get more money. And the WR, you can still limit it. I mean, it's not a
all
not
just
a hard
put
thing,
money creating the grassroots clubs. Go to your local.
No, even
club,
that, yeah.
Buy a couple of pints, watch the game, or be a member. You know, there's other ways of putting money in the grassroots rather than expecting. You know, the WRU does have a responsibility, same the RFU does in England, to put money in the grassroots rugby. But then, if you have an interest in rugby, you have a responsibility to do so as well.
Yeah.
Well, it's always one of my arguments on Twitter are they're my favourite things. I said this last week. Someone said to me, "You're seeking attention." Yeah, mate. I'm sending text messages to people I don't know. We're all looking for attention. We're on fucking Twitter, right? The other argument that I love is people going, "Well, I don't like what's happening in my region, so I'm going to go and watch my local team instead." Fucking great. Right. You're still supporting the structure that's in place. That's fucking fantastic. Go down there, buy a ticket, have a few drinks. Fucking brilliant. Like, it's not, I'll spike the region by going, because they've still got the same people turning up, and now you're supporting a club within the region as well. Fucking brilliant. Go down there. Enjoy it. I go to watch my local team. People will say I used to play for them. I will. I do play for them, honest. I play there. I coach there. Like, it's part of the structure. It's part of the system. It's this way it all works. People are just fucking thick, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Going to hear arguments from me there.
But yeah, and I don't think it's anything new. In fact, like, as a kid, it's one of the pulls of rugby as well. As well as going to watch the game, is that you get treated a bit like an adult because all the adults are a little bit drunk and inhibitions are down and so, like...
Yeah, send you to the bar.
Yeah, people are swearing a little bit and you're hearing jokes you wouldn't usually hear and you feel like one of the guys. Like, that's... For me, that was always the joy of being at the game. Ooh,
it always felt like a slightly adult environment. I remember going to watch, I think it was Pontypool versus Neath. This would be early 80s. And my mother was with us. And the guy was swearing. And someone said, "Oh, listen, there's a woman here." And someone else said, "Can't be, it's Pontypool." And I never heard anything more hilarious in my life.
That's a great joke. So,
I went to one of the autumn games. So I went to South Africa, and I have to say the big kerfuffle that was caused with people spilling drinks in the group of us, spilled drinks over the row in front, were the two people not drinking. So I mean, it's not just sometimes spilling beer happens.
But it's awkward, isn't it? You know, you're really tightly packed. And I remember going to a soccer game and dropping a hot dog down the back of a bloke's coat. You know, I'd had a beer, but I fell forward. The sausage had slipped out of the bun and gone down the back of the bloke's coat.
That's superb. I'd like to think he'd done it in like a Benny and Hill style and just went straight down into like his bum cleavage.
I didn't look that much, to be honest. And then I kind of shifted the other side of my then girlfriend.
Explain me. So what are you up to? Well, my drink got spilled during the Wales-Australia game, but that was because I stupidly left on the floor while a guy on two crutches came past and didn't think about it. And I turned back and went, ah, shit. That was completely my fault. There was a bloke at the Wales-New Zealand game as well who was sick in the row in front of us. But full credit to him, he was only sick in his own beard.
That's a former, I guess.
Honestly, it wasn't even that thick a beard, but it was a little bit, it was that kind of drink sick in his beard. And he went and washed it, he came back, he apologised to the people in front, and he watched the game. I've got full credit to him. You can't fault that. I think it's all come about as well because of one dickhead on a pitch. Like it's been bubbling away with people saying people shouldn't drink, and that's why we've got this no drinking stand and what have you. But one dickhead on a pitch has been the tipping point, I think, where everything's been written off as it's one big fucking pub and everyone's just there to get pissed. I like a drink. I like while I'm watching rugby. I like to watch the rugby. Fuck off of trying to take my drink off me. I'm more than capable of sitting in there watching a game, having a drink. Whether I'm capable of behaving myself afterwards is neither here nor there. When I'm watching a game, I'm a good boy.
Yep.
The issue is, though, it's, you know, kind of, I'm going to sound like an exception, the old man, though, rather than a middle-aged man. But the problem is the internet has democratized everything to the point that everybody thinks their opinion has a level of value. And yeah, you can not want alcohol at rugby games, but I tell you what, it's never ending until they find another way of earning hundreds of thousands of pounds on top of the money they're earning from tickets every game. So you can have your opinion, but trust me, it's not going to make a huge amount of difference.
Well, that's the next thing, isn't it? If they don't serve beer in games, then the ticket prices will go up.
And they're not cheap to begin with, you know.
Yeah, something's got to give somewhere. Like, you can't... Just because you don't like something doesn't matter. I fucking hate Ed Sheeran, but the prick's got to play the stadium to keep us going. So, you know, I'll put up with it. I'll just not turn up on the night. Big cabbage-headed twat that he is. But I don't particularly want him in the stadium. I said I'm quite glad that Ramstein's coming in after him to burn all the mediocrity off of their fireworks and fucking pyrotechnics. But it's got to happen. Because it brings money in. Ooh, Ramstein.
Yeah, they're metal for people who don't like metal.
But at least they got fire.
Playing well, I like them.
while I'm on Wales Online, fuck it, let's go in two-footed. Talking of bullshit articles, Wales Online are putting out. They released the real world rankings after the Autumn Internationals. And by real, what I mean is the exact opposite of that, the ones that are not actually real. What do we make of the Wales Online's real world rankings that are not real? For their rankings were South Africa 1, England 2, France 3, New Zealand 4, Ireland 5, Wales 6, Scotland 7, Australia 8, Argentina 9, Japan 10.
The thing is, right, world rankings in rugby are made up and rubbish anyway. They're pointless. They're absolutely pointless. The only sports where they are meaningful are individual sports like tennis and golf. Having world rankings in team sports are a waste of time. They're just lists for people who like making lists. And that's it. You know, because it's hard to... With tennis, you pretty much know that the number one seed in the world is the best in the world. But, you know, Wales have been number one world ranked in the last 2 years. They've never been best of the world in my lifetime. It's insanity.
And you go insulting Hadley Parks. He single-handedly took us to number one.
Yeah, that's what I think it was. We got extra points for Hadley.
Yeah.
But look, I love Hadley Parks, and I clearly love Wales as well. But world rankings are bonkers, and any world ranking that doesn't have France at the top is also bonkers.
But then they were shit against Georgia.
Yeah, but Georgia bring up the worst in teams.
Yeah, that's fair. I'll give you that. Yeah, we've got a lot of teams that bring out the worst in our team, don't we? As soon as we move outside of the established crew and New Zealand, suddenly we're shit.
But I think as well, with like a game like Georgia, and it was the same in the COVID Cup last year with Wales, that they make such raft of changes that it just loses a bit of continuity. And our French side still look decent. You're playing Wokey at second row for the first time in his adult rugby career. And McAlew, I love McAlew with a passion, but God, I'm not sure what that bloke's doing on the field sometimes. But you know, this is
they are a good fun team. And we did talk about, wasn't that the game that we talked about, the three Elton Johns?
That was France Argentina, wasn't it?
Because it was France Argentina.
Yeah, Jalape and Entermac starting, which is
no piano movers and three Elton Johns was the Argentina game. My favourite bit, I don't know if you read the article, there was a bit in the article, and I am paraphrasing, I can't remember what I said, but it basically said something along the lines, well, the trouble is, if you've got a full year unbeaten, then everyone thinks you're a good team in the rankings, and then if you don't win for a year, then you drop down. Well, like, yeah, fucking of course. Like, that's exactly how the rankings should work. Like, I don't understand what the argument is there.
The issue with the rankings, going back to what I was saying about tennis, the way the tennis rankings are weighted are according to the tournaments and the settings and the round and everything else. So if you beat some Normark in a random stadium somewhere in the middle of Serbia, then you get a couple of points. If you beat the world number two in the semi-finals of the Australian Open, then you get loads of points. But the way the world rankings work with rugby is, oh, no, well, you've just won a game, so therefore you get this. Not taking into context anything else.
Well, that's not quite true, because I went and had a look at the algorithm, and it's sort of like, you look on points differential. So if there's a huge difference in points, if New Zealand go and play Hong Kong, you know, they're not going to get anything because there's such a big gap, and they try and allow for home advantage and sort of. But then they don't talk about, is it a competition? You know, I mean, other than the World Cup where they double the points. Yeah. I mean, it looks like someone's best fudge. It's someone's best fudge.
Yeah.
And, you know, with like the URC now, with the expected points, we need to go back and re-look at it. So there's valid in how the thing works. But at the same time, I mean,
who gives a shit?
What? Yeah. Exactly.
Who gives a shit?
The only time it's relevant is the autumn after the World Cup where they do the pools. Yeah. That's it. After that, it's completely irrelevant. And even then, a lot of people would argue, shouldn't we do a bit closer to the World Cup? Because then you have situations like the Pool of Death in 2015 or for Wales in 2019, 2023, 2027, 2031, and every other World Cup where we play Fiji, Georgia and Australia for the 80 millionth time in a World Cup. You know, it is a complete irrelevancy, and to be honest, it just seems to be something to one, annoy South Africans when New Zealand are number one after, when they're the World Cup holders, and B, give Wales Online articles to write about every international weekend. Other than that, no use.
The article did say as well, it's very hard to argue against South Africa being number one ranked team. And I thought, no, it's not. Not really. I'm not saying they shouldn't be, but it's not hard to argue against them being. I mean, the fact that they lost games in the Rugby Championship, they lost to England, they've struggled at times, they only just beat Wales. It's not that hard to argue with, really.
You can argue that England or France or New Zealand have a right as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And drop Quade Cooper back into Australia and they can be higher than the eighth that they've given them. Like
Australia are better than both Scotland and Wales. We might have both beaten them, but Australia are a better team, I think, overall than Scotland and Wales.
Well, when they've got a full selection, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. So what's more of a nonsense than World Rugby Rankings is a made-up World Rugby Rankings, which, it was fucking bizarre. Anyway, that's glad we got that off our chest. The other big news that's happened in the meantime, dual nationality's back. So players who've played for one country don't have to be tied to that country for the rest of their lives. Essentially, if you stand down for 3 years, you can make a comeback, which is why I'm assuming Sergio Parisse hasn't played for Italy for a while. He's faked his injury so he can go back, win a World Cup with Argentina, kick a drop goal in the final. Everyone carries on as normal. He said he wanted a final fling at rugby. We all assumed he meant Italy. Who knows what's actually going to happen? Good thing, bad thing? Okay.
Bit of both for me. It's a good thing from the point of view that it should, well, I'm not such a fan of all these Islander players who've got a cap for New Zealand, Australia. This just seemed to be a bit of an issue, and I'll talk a bit more about that in a sec. But I think for me, what is good is like guys like Morgan Parra, who qualifies for Portugal. Imagine if you're a Portuguese player, semi-pro player, and you've got someone like him in your camp working alongside, and, you know, sides like Romania, or if people like that can play for those kind of sides, I think that will have an influence. All the talk about, oh, can you imagine what the Tonga team would look like if the Vunapola brothers and Talupe Faletau and X, Y, and Z were playing for them? No, it can't, because it's not going to happen. These guys aren't going to go and play for Tonga. They aren't, you know, Nathan Hughes isn't going to go and play for Fiji.
I think Israel Folau will play for Tonga.
Well, he will, because no one else wants him. So, you know, it's...
If Billy Vunapola does go as well, as I said on Twitter, then my only hope is that Ireland call up Dunn. Play Tonga in the World Cup.
I did see that.
Have Dunn just slide over the line in the last minute to score a try. I don't know if he's got a boyfriend. If he has, then I'm hoping he's there and they can kiss. I'm really, I'm at home. Oh, this, it should be a game for everyone. Yeah. And so fucking Israel Folau and Omar Fobipola come fucking... they're not welcome.
You could really piss him off and make Craig Maxwell-Keys the ref for every game.
Yes. Yeah, 100%. I'm all for this. We'll have Nigel Owens and Gareth Thomas in the studio. Let's fucking really hammer him a point to him.
The issue is, though, it's not going to happen like that.
No, I know. All right, don't piss him off.
Not from the point of view of, you know, kind of upsetting homophobes, but all these lists you see of, oh, this is what the Samoan team could look like and this is what the Tongan team could look like. Well, no, it's not. And that's what most upset me about this. We've missed the actual conversation about how this can actually help second, third and fourth tier nations, not just second tier nations. But instead, we're having these fantasy lists of island teams, which are never actually going to happen.
Well, the issue I've got with it, well, there's two issues that I got with it. First of all, isn't the answer just to pay players more fairly when they play international games so that they don't feel the need to go somewhere else to play rugby? They don't feel the need that they've got to play for the All Blacks or England or Wales or whatever it might be to earn a decent living, because actually turning out for Tonga, Fiji, Samoa, Portugal, whoever it may be playing, or Georgia, they actually get the same pay or closer to the same, not even the same pay, just closer to it.
And give them more than 3 days in camp as well.
Yeah. And making sure that clubs don't pull out bullshit reasons for why they're not released and then suddenly they turn up and play on a Saturday. Like, this is, that's what needs to be sorted. It's very much, this is the easy answer with, oh yeah, we can let him go and then he can come back. And second of all, do we not think it might encourage more players who felt that they probably should play for their country to actually piss off for the prime of their career, pay for another club, and then when they're done and spent, say, all right, and go back now. It's fine. Yeah. I don't need to make that connection because I feel like I can do my bit further down the line by going back to play for them then.
And the best thing about the Tonga list as well was so showing the dream Tonga team, the Vunapolas, and as he fell out, Kurt Marath was still a 10. and for Kurt Marath to play in an international side with Marco Vunapola would be in 3 years' time when Kurt Marath would be at least 41 years of age.
Well, I mean, a 41 prop scored for the Barbars on the weekend. I mean, I don't see what's wrong with it.
Yeah. Gav, come on now. glasshouses, right?
I'm not playing international rugby, though, Grant. Yeah,
look, not yet. But who knows? You get the call up for the Blues next week. It's all, it's where it all starts. It's where it all kicks off.
Well, I was wondering if over a weekend, over 3 weekends, I didn't realise I'd wait 3 years. I could play for Wales, who I qualify clearly, England, who I qualify for resident, and America, who I qualify for marriage on successive weekends.
I was sort of thinking about it, and you know, on the face value, it seems like a good, you know, a good idea. Particularly, you know, anyone who's sort of been, you know, if you get, I mean, I don't think it happens that often. I know there are a lot of players who get, you know, it gets accused of, you know, Eddie Jones, you know, wanting to cap someone like Paolo Adogru just so he can't play for Italy, you know, and I mean, I don't think it happens as much as people suggest it might. But I mean, if, you know, at least that says there's no point in that. But a lot of people, you know, pointing out quite rightly that, you know, it, yes, it kind of helps Tonga, Samoa, Fiji, but doesn't really do a lot for the other tier two nations, really. Because, you know, they don't have the same situation where their players are being pulled out. So, yeah. I mean, it doesn't help that. But, and also, you know, the biggest issue with this, you know, these rugbys are things like, you know, Tonga expected to go to it, you know. I mean, you know, it was a big thing this autumn that, you know, England were letting Tonga have a six-figure salary when, you know, they're pulling in, was it, tens of millions? It's like, well,
obscene amounts.
Yeah, so, you know, the Tonga team are all together are getting as much as, you know, some of the England players getting a year. So, you know, I think, you know, it's a step. It's a step in the right direction, you know, along with, you know, the change in the residency rule. So it's now up to five starting from January. You've got to be in there for that. And they're eventually going to move it to 10. You know, so, I mean, it's a good start to try and level the playing field, but, you know, a lot more has got to be done.
But it's a bit, you know, it's the kind of, it looks good. It's the kind of step that looks good. But in reality, what actually has to happen is the playing field is leveled financially and the tier one nations go to tier two nations and play full tests out there. That's the other thing as well. It's not a case of let's drag Georgia across, go to Georgia, go to Tonga, go to Fiji, play games there.
I think there's a very, very simple answer to this. And that's every time a team tours, they have to play one away game against a tier two nation. So when we travel down to play the All Blacks, we make a stop off at Fiji, Tonga, wherever that may be. And we play there. Or if you play South Africa, you play Namibia. When they come up, when New Zealand travel up and do their tour of England or Wales, you stop off in Georgia, you stop off in Portugal, you stop off in, and just play a game. And you have to. It's mandatory. If you're having a tour, you can have that tour, but you play one away game against a tier two nation. And that one game a year can make a massive difference. Even if you put out a second string team, mm-hmm. The fact that you're turning up in that place to play them means that they're bringing in crowds, they're bringing in people, and they're giving exposure to the game. I think it's a piss easy way of doing it. Overcomplicated by unions not wanting to do it because they don't want to inconvenience themselves because they want to chase the money, which I know they've got to have a certain amount of money, but by the same token, it's a community game, it's a minority game. You've got to give a little fucking something back.
And it's only been a professional game for 25 years. You know, we can't operate like football. We cannot operate like soccer because soccer works in a very different way.
Yeah.
We have to understand that we have to level teams up. And football had to do that in the 30s and, you know, through into the 40s and the 50s. And now we have to do it as well. Otherwise, it's going to be the same four nations winning World Cups.
Well, I'll tell you, though, the two good points of the dual nationality. And one of them I've just thought of all over. One is that Stephen Shingler finally gets to realise his dream of playing for Scotland. Because he's waited years for this, because they stepped in because of that one Wales A game that he played.
And the 20s, I think. Not
in the 20s. In the 20s
for the capture team.
Ruined his career. This could be the start. Now, a couple of good games for Elaine Trailfinders, and suddenly he's back on the path to international rugby. Stephen Shingler may make... And then as a swap in 3 years, we'll get Javan Sebastian back to shore up that scrum, ready for not the next World Cup, but the World Cup after. I think it's only fair that that's the way that we work. If Scotland can have it. These are the important points that nobody is talking about. I'm going to start a countdown for when Javerton's Welsh again. is what needs to be done.
That's a Twitter account, surely.
Just every day, how long until, and then he'll play a game in the Six Nations and have to restart the fucking count.
Counting down until Javon Sebastian is Welsh again.
You said about making small changes where big changes are needed. I'm going to use that as a really bad segue into the Exeter Chiefs, because not a week can go by we're on this podcast where Exeter Chiefs don't come up. Despite Tony Rowe making his promise that it would go to the vote at the AGM, untrusting he proved to be. Who would have known that Tony Rowe might be a little bit unscrupulous? It turns out that was a lie, and he said, oh, actually, no, it's not going to the vote at the AGM. We're just going to bring it up and have a little chat about it. Now they've said a decision's going to be made in the coming weeks. Is this just them trying to quell the tide a little bit, or do we think that things are going to change?
Well, I mean, they said they're going to change their branding. They haven't put a timeline on it. And then, I mean, a point that was brought up on Blood and Mud last night, on Monday night, they've just gone and released the most god-awful set of oddball underwear with, you know, the logo just emblazoned everywhere. And you're just like, one, it looks awful. One, it looks awful. And two, like, if you're going to release that, are you really that serious about it?
I think someone sent a screenshot showing that's been discontinued already. So that was a hell of a run. I didn't realize that was new. I just seen the discontinued and I thought, oh, this is a sign of things to come. So that lasted, what, 2 days?
I don't know. Maybe it's discontinued since. And they also talked about a horrific jumper.
Oh, the Christmas jumper.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's awful. That's
all,
absolutely
all Christmas jumpers are awful.
Yeah, and I don't know if people who do ironic Christmas jumpers are better or worse than people who just wear Christmas jumpers. Having said that, I've got to spend tomorrow looking for a Christmas jumper because it's mandatory for me. Otherwise, I get a £10 fine and I'm not taking that risk. Although, it's one of those ones, I got to pay a £10 fine or buy a £20 jumper.
Yes.
Buy a jumper. Still trying for 2 years now.
But I think with Exeter is that I think it's a death rattle now, though, because I can't remember who it was. Someone on Twitter, we were talking about it, and they said, I said, you know, it's a business decision now. And that's the thing, because it's hitting the business. Yeah. They are sponsored by a patch of land next to an A road in Exeter.
Tony Rowe's Mud Patch.
Yeah, you know, it's affecting the business now. Big companies do not want to be involved with that toxic brand. So it will change. It will become, you know, I imagine they'll take the kind of Celtic thing, because I've got no issue with them being called the Chiefs, you know, kind of.
Yeah.
That tradition of calling first team the Chiefs is not just a West Country thing, you know, some kind of Valleys teams used to do it as well. You know, it's not a new thing, it's a very whole thing. It's just the branding that goes with it. And Tony Rowe is, well, he's a singular bloke, isn't he? And he's fighting a battle now, and he knows he's losing it. And it's interesting that the oddballs have done that, because clearly they thought, hang on a sec, we don't know if we get involved in this.
Yeah. And it does, like, this is slowly and slowly built. And then it's really exploded over the last 2 years where it's come into the public consciousness. Chiefs for Change have done a fantastic job. They've been superb and consistent throughout. And considering people have taken abuse and been threatened with physical violence and people are trying to dox them. And
well, they're being doxed right now, yeah, aren't they? You know, I saw it on, somebody did it on a comment on ruck.co.uk Facebook page.
So they've been superb. So, and they put out a statement, I think, again this week, saying that the decision should be made, including First Nations people, because essentially it's them that they affect. But next door's dog is really not happy. I don't think you can hear that. He's really not happy with the Exeter Chiefs. He's really going out there.
Or maybe he's a Chiefs fan. Maybe he's one of the Chiefs fans. And he's outraged at our terrible woke take on rugby.
So, yeah, again, like you say, it's only got to be a matter of time, surely. I can't believe that they've kept it going this long. And then even people who have been long supporters of the branding have slowly come round to actually this isn't good. And obviously the change in America, especially with the NFL teams, that's been a massive influence on it as well. When even America saying, "But actually, like, we need to change this." Not always the most woke nation on earth, it's fair to say, America. So when they're at the front of the curve, and I know it's literally close at the home for them, but I think that's been a big wake up call to everyone to go, actually, yeah, this is not okay. Speaking of not okay.
a nice segue.
Thank you. Razzie Erasmus might have a documentary coming out. Obviously, he's got a lot of time now that he's not allowed any rugby-related activities, and he's going to make a rugby-related documentary instead. Like, I'm not sure where the line draws. Obviously, he must be banned from watching rugby on a Saturday, even if it's on telly, because his little promoting South African rugby seemed to have missed the women's team, who, as he was tweeting, were having a bit of a tune-in in front of a record crowd. This can't be happening, can it? This can't be. Does he still think this is a good idea? Even it was bad enough when it was on Vimeo. Never mind when it was on fucking Netflix or whatever it's going to be on.
I don't think it's him, though. It's a South African public. You know, he hasn't lost a great deal of support in South Africa. It's just the rest of the world that he seems to have the issues with, and he's box office, and that's why they do it, because there's not many personalities in rugby or that interesting, are they? Nobody wants to see Kingsley Jones doing a documentary about what's going wrong in Canada. But
I do know you've said that.
Yeah, actually, do you know what? I'd love to hear this.
I think that'd be great. We're going to move on to another Welsh Coach Abroad, or not abroad anymore in a bit, but I would 100% watch that documentary. That sounds amazing to me. I'm just... like,
next time I see Kingsley Jones, I will bring that up with him.
I quite like Kingsley. I know he's not a great coach, but I quite like Kingsley.
Well, he's a good rugby bloke, you know, and he does, it's not his fault that the Canadian Rugby Union is a mess. He is not responsible for that.
And that's it. And they've lost a lot of funding. They are really struggling. I went out to Canada more than 20 years ago. How old am I? Yeah, 20, but say 20 years ago. And they were saying then that they were worried. Like, we were talking to big rugby fans, and they said, like, there's nothing underneath. Like, there is no grassroots, because all the rugby clubs are becoming football clubs. All the pitches are becoming football pitches. And basically, the infrastructure's shot. And they were panicking then and saying that it's only a matter of time before the arse falls out of this team. And it's happened 20 years down the line. Like, they've all been proven to be bang on. Like, because they think as well, like, there's no money in rugby, so people weren't really that interested in it. And the only people who were interested in it were people who were all, like, generations of being interested in it. Like, your father played, and generally expats, which is what the nice way that we call British immigrants. It was generally expats that were forcing sort of their kids to play rugby because no one else gave a shit.
No, and they've been left behind by America. The minute it was announced sevens, admittedly, but as an Olympic sport, yeah, money is found in America, because, you know, America looks at the Olympic sports so they can do well in. Rugby naturally fits into it because it's an athletic contact sport, which they have lots of. So they've thrown money at it, and Canada has been left far behind. I don't know how we managed to get to Canada from Razzie Erasmus, but there you go.
It was your rant about Kingsley Jones. Well, not rant, your statement about Kingsley Jones. Razzie's coming across on Twitter. He's just going from pub to pub drinking and talking about how hard done by South Africa was. He's basically become a South African Nigel Farage. That's how Farage did his campaign before the last election, where he just turned up at random Wetherspoons. There's a really good picture of him in Wetherspoons in Caerphilly, I think, where the picture behind him is, he stood there in front of what is, and there's no nice, just a massive dog's dick, because they've got pictures on the wall and the guy's got his dog there, and the only thing you can see in the background.
Is this Farage or Razzie now?
I don't think Razzie would go to Caerphilly.
Yeah, I can't imagine it going down well. But Yeah, he seems to be spending all his free time just going pub to pub and drinking pints at the moment.
Oh, that 1 pint of Guinness he had as well, that was a crime. That's the worst, that's the worst thing he's done in the last year, is post that picture of that pint of Guinness.
And he used to coach Munster. Like, yeah, surely he's had some good Guinnesses.
Well, you know why he's done that, don't you? It's because it's all the IRFU's fault.
It's symbolic, him downing that pint of Irish.
Yeah. To be fair, I had a pint of Guinness at Twickenham that was also a crime against lots of things.
So the documentary, do we see Razzie as like a Stephen Avery character in this, like making a murderer? Do you think he's been hard done by for his crimes? They're going to bring in some sort of South African forensic? I see him as a little bit like Joe Exotic. Like the Springboks King. Like, I think this is like that Razzie is Joe Exotic. I mean, he's already got a baseball cap. We know that from the Vimeo picture. I just cut the mullet in. I need to pitch this.
This is asking to go out on Twitter, this pitch.
Suddenly, I'm in full support of this documentary. If they do it exactly the same way, and I mean Warren Gatlin, Carol Baskin, he can already use the tunes that they. This is so simple. Right, I'm on it. Tomorrow we're pitching this to Netflix. Someone get
on. I'm busy pitching movie ideas to Disney at the minute. I don't know if you've
got them. Your pitch of the Muppet version of The Omen.
Yeah, Muppet Omen, yeah.
Well, you've crossed the streams again, Gav.
Sorry.
World Rugby, are we saying they need to step in on Razzie? Not on Razzie, not on the Muppets Disney thing or the Omen.
Is it going to happen though? You know, I think that's my real thing as well. Or, you know, or there might be a documentary about this. Yeah, there might well be, but it probably isn't because it's not really going to be that exciting, is it?
Well, yeah. Well, like, what's the? Is it just going to be loads of rugby footage with yellow circles on it?
Razzie ranting in front of a whiteboard.
Yeah, I don't. What's it going to be?
I can't imagine it. They're going to be able to top Chasing the Sun, so they may as well not bother because that was fantastic. So I mean, you know, if you can't make a decent sequel, just scrap the idea.
Yeah, but the thing is, this is the heel turn, isn't it? You know, if Chasing the Sun was their kind of period of being a face, this is their heel turn now.
Razzie coming out with Vince McMahon. Walking down the ramp together. No chance. See, the more we talk about it, the more I really want a Razzie documentary.
This is the problem with these things. It's that morbid curiosity. Like, if someone, like the whole thing with Tiger King, if someone just said to you, oh yeah, this guy who runs a tiger zoo, yeah, he's accused someone of killing his wife and now he's in jail. And you're like, eh? And then you start talking about it and you go, oh, hang on. Yeah, go on then. I've got nothing to do I haven't got anything to do this afternoon. I'll binge it.
Again, nothing really happens. Like, we know that he's in jail and we know that, but nothing really happens. And then he just wanders around the safari park being a bit mental. Oh, and it's a woman does get her arm bitten off. That's quite a big plot point. And he will never financially recover from this. It's a that's a meme that's not used enough.
I've never seen it.
Have you not used it? No. I honestly can't work out whether I loved it. I think the problem was I watched Making a Murderer, which is like so like engrossing and really draws you in. And you go, oh, well, obviously this guy's been falsely imprisoned. And so I think I kind of went in with the same mentality. And I'm like, oh, well, obviously Joe Exotic's been falsely imprisoned. And then the further in you go, they're all just mad. And not like absolutely loopy. Not like, you know, they're just so bizarre. Like these people really exist. Because I was like, if you set that up as a sitcom that you wrote, no one would watch that because it's so unbelievable. Everyone was, this fucking ridiculous. What's this shit? This is worse than Mrs. Brown's Boys. But like, as a documentary, as real life people, you just can't stop watching it. It's so strange. I love rugby, me. Speaking of Welsh coaches abroad, which we were a while back, Lynn Jones is coming home in the most bizarre post-match interview I've seen in a while. We've both seen the interview, yeah?
Look, today it was a huge plus for Russian rugby. I think it's a great example to show that you must trust young players, because young players have enthusiasm, fitness, and they have no size, they just play. And it was just a pleasure to see Semikov and Panarin and Kariv. Bogdan Kariv was very good. We understand we made mistakes in the match, and yeah, that's inexperience of players, but what's important is the work and the hard work that players put in and the skill they show. It was just really good, and a lot of positives today. It's very too often in games like this with Russia over the years, people don't try and they fall asleep and there's no effort because some best players are missing. But today there was a lot of spirit with the players, and you can't ask more than that. They did their best, and that's the, you know, but...
Despite the difference in the score was this time, his impression of the game is generally that it is better than the previous one.
Well, no, look, we were much better last game, to be honest. Today was a different referee who sees the game differently. We deserved to win the first game. Today, Chile deserved to win. Today wasn't about winning. It was about playing well and developing young players. And now I'm going home to Wales. Thank you.
But first of all, like, what's that accent? Like, it was so strange how he just flipped between being Russian and being Welsh, just constantly back and forth. It made the Steve McLaren thing look normal. It was strange.
It's genuinely perfect, that clip. Absolutely genuinely perfect. I'm not quite sure whatever happens in it. I think the other great point during it as well is it was announced by the Supreme Council of the Russian Rugby Federation, which, well, I'm assuming they're listening, because anybody called the Supreme Council probably listening to everything they're doing.
Yeah.
I will happily do the job of being the coach of Russia. I'm nowhere near as good a coach as Lynn Jones, but I will do it for about half the money as long as I can do it over Zoom. But, you know, I'm quite happy to throw out there. So, members of the Supreme Council, please just hit me up.
The Supreme Council is such a great name. What a great name.
But I'll be honest, if you gave me a million guesses on what Russia, the Russian Rugby Union were going to call their sort of like top board, I wouldn't get it. But I'm not surprised in the slightest that it's Supreme Rugby Council, because it just sounds so Russian.
Well, this is the thing. Like, not only was Lynn Jones's accent, where he kind of dropped into this compare the meerkat Russian, his facial expressions were full like Russian czar as well. The faces that he pulls was like he was straight like some oligarch, fucking, or head of a Russian mafia somewhere. What's the film with the fight in the sauna? He looks like he could be one of the bad guys in that. I got Siberian, whatever the fuck is called. Like, he looks, the faces that he pulls is like he's trying to blend in. He spent so much time in Russia, he's just going, I've just got to look normal. Don't let anyone know you're Welsh. And then he puts on a full Welsh accent and then goes, like, you weren't going to end it with, cheers, bud. Or was he ending with, I'm going back home to Wales. Not leaving any doubt in anyone's mind that that was his resignation. Like, I'm not going home. I'm not going back to the flat. I'm going home to Wales. I'm fucking done. Yeah, this is it.
I reckon it's a thankless job, though, isn't it? I think if you're an international coach of anyone outside of the tier one sides or the big tier two sides,
is a fairly thankless task. And it's not like being a football coach in Russia, where you get plenty of money and stuff. It's not something I'd want to do, despite my request for the Russian Federation to offer me a job. You know, it's not something. You know, same with Kingsley in Canada.
But by the same token, right, what are you expected to do as a Russian coach? Like, get to a World Cup, win one game. You've had a fucking amazing 4 years. If you win one game at a World Cup, if you win two, you're guaranteed another two World Cups. Well, like, you're a fucking hero.
You beat Belgium and Portugal, and you're pretty safe for you.
Yeah. And then you get to a World Cup, maybe we'll turn over one team. Like, there's always a chance that someone turns up as a bad day. You might win one game. And then you're a fucking hero. Like, it's kind of thankless, but it's also the easiest job in the world.
Well, yeah, but it must be a bit depressing. You know, if you're a coach, you want to win games. And if the level of ambition is, right, we'll beat Belgium, we'll beat Portugal, we'll beat the Netherlands, we'll get absolutely rolled over by Romania and Georgia, but that's all right. That can't be very satisfying, can it?
Well, I think it spoke volumes for his mentality for the whole time he's been in Russia, where any win's a good win, because he was like, today wasn't about the result, it was about the performance. And you went, you played fucking Chile. Like, you're not playing... Well, I know Chile are on a bit of a run, but let's just say...
Don't insult Chile now. Chile are amazing. And they are the new darlings of world rugby.
Oh, and I'm loving it. I mean... As someone who, on Squidge Rugby's recommendation, downloaded the South American rugby app and stayed up until 3 o'clock in the morning to watch Brazil play Argentina seconds, right? I am loving watching these teams come through. As someone who wrote a fucking blog post about Brazil fucking years ago saying that it was going to be the next top bed of rugby. And this has almost become true. It's kind of become right. I mean, AD Gardner didn't switch from rugby league and play a game from at the World Cup, at the Olympics, like I thought he would. But still... I'm loving watching Chile come through there, but I don't think you can say, as Russia coach, today was about the performance. I mean, just lost to Chile twice.
He lost to Jersey as well. Let's not forget the fact he lost to Jersey and not the full Jersey team.
And not just after the Lions, when all the Lions were on the island, I'm guessing.
You know, if you were losing to a lower level championship side as an international coach, maybe do something else, mate.
Well, perhaps they can put Russia into the new Anglo-Welsh second division. And then we've got the region's got a chance of winning a few, because we all know that it's only a matter of time.
Away game in St. Petersburg for Cardiff this weekend. 7:30 kickoff on a Friday.
I was going to say, the worst thing is, it's a Saturday evening kickoff, otherwise everyone was up for it. So, someone on Twitter going, what time's the bus back to Pontypridd? Rugby is never really boring for long. Rugby is, I fucking love it. It's great. Barbas got called off while we were off. I'm not going to go too much into that because I thought it was already called off when Samoa brought in. I was convinced that the Barbas game had been called off, and then the Barbas started announcing players he was going to play after it was called off, and then it wasn't called off, but they called up players that said they weren't going to play. Quade Cooper being one, where they announced Quade Cooper in the squad, and Quade Cooper went, well, I'm not playing, what are you talking about?
My friend went to the game, and the game had been called off about 2 hours before they got to the stadium, essentially. And then they got the game's on. Are you going to stay for the women's game?
Well, yeah, and that was the thing. Like, it was a record attendance, wasn't it, for the women's game, which did feel a little bit like a cheat, like because of the way it was done, but no doubt women's games on the up, and so it was fucking great to see people watching. Hopefully it means that people will go back and watch another one. I mean, it would have been nice as well if it was a bit of a closer game, because they essentially fucking tuned them. But there was some nice rugby in there as well, which hopefully will have attracted some people to turn up. Well, I was meant to be going to the Wales game the day after, the Wales women game, the day after the Australian game. We didn't make it in the end. So hopefully are we going to do some with this new Six Nations, because they've actually announced the fixtures now.
Yeah, excellent.
I mean, only 3 months before the tournament starts. You know, you don't need too much time to organize these things. It's not like these players are semi-professionals and got other jobs as well and need to organize their fucking travel and their time off and everything. Just leave it till the last minute. It's fine. But we finally got it in place. It's not going to overlap too much with the men's game, which is good that it gets its own window and gets its own time and gets its own air time and that we can watch it. And all the games are televised. And I'm hoping it's not going to be a fucking red button.
Oh, that was nightmarish because I was watching those games and it was the fact that half-time, there's no pundits or anything. It's just white, well, not white noise. It's just a video shot of the screen of the pitch. And nothing else.
Like when you illegally stream sometimes. Not that I would ever do that, but like when you illegally stream sometimes from other countries and just half-time, just there's the pitch. There's the...
Yeah. Or the EPRC for the Challenge Cup when you have the dodgy single camera feed. That you know, in the middle of Russia, so it, you know, every now and again you get that either static or snow. You never can tell which. Well, I mean, I would, in fairness to Six Nations, announcing the fixtures 3 months early is still a hell of a lot quicker than the URC did it.
This is true, I suppose. This is true, but I would say as well, all the URC players are full-time professionals, who they don't really need to book any time off. If anything, they've had too much time in hotel rooms. so yeah, it's good that it's finally in place, and it doesn't feel as bad as in previous years. I might be wrong in saying that, but I'm pretty sure in previous years they've left it. Even it was last year, it seemed to be like, yeah, you're playing tomorrow, girls, get ready, clean your boots off.
They had that kind of group system, didn't they, last year, which
yeah,
didn't do anyone any favors.
So it's good that we finally got some fixtures at least, and we've got something to look forward to. And like I said, it's not clashing. So, Richie Pugh has come back in as Welsh Sevens coach, which is a nice little appointment, and also shows that there's a future of Welsh Sevens.
If it's funded.
I mean, I think it's kind of got to be now, wasn't it? They've got to do something with it. It looked like some people wanted it just to continue as Great Britain. Scotland announced a squad, so obviously they wasted no time in fucking distancing themselves with that idea. Wales went, hey, we've got a coach, and they went, yeah, we've got a full fucking squad. Get on with it, come on, let's get going.
It needs to be funded properly. That's, you know, that's the challenge. It's the same with the Welsh women, it's the same with everything else. There has to be proper funding for it to work. We can create good sevens players, I've no doubt about that. And this guy's in the line in the British squad now, Luke Trahan particularly. But come on, just fund it properly. Give these guys time and space and training facilities so they can compete on the world stage.
Well, this is the thing. Will it be used to try and compete? Will it be used as a tool for preparing players for playing 15s rugby, which is kind of how they used it in the past? I mean, it kind of buys into the way Pivac wants to play a little bit, of it being that open game, that expansive offloading, the quick rucks. It kind of buys into that if that's what he's going to do.
Well, yeah, there is lots of aimless running about. So, yes, it does fit with Pivac's attacking style.
You watch yourself, Thomas. You watch yourself.
I'm not a fan of sevens.
I was going to say that the only problem is I don't give a shit about sevens, to be honest. I find it a bit shit. I like women's sevens. I find women's sevens absolutely fascinating. Men's sevens.
It's fine. It's like 2020 cricket or, you know, chicken burgers. But the real thing is better.
Oh, hang on, I need to write that down. Yeah, I really struggle with sevens. I don't know what it is. I can't really get into it. There'll be an odd game. I like 2020 cricket. I got to say, for all my taking the piss out of cricket as well, you know, I quite like a game of 2020. I don't like any sport that takes 5 days to play one game. I can't get my head around that.
It can still be a draw. I was explaining that to American relatives. They genuinely thought of winding them up.
I quite like the idea. You can have your whole. You can watch. You can basically binge watch a tournament in a weekend. I mean, yeah, I quite like the format. It's quite easy. You know, short attention span. You don't have to sit there. You know, that is piss head rugby, because you know if you want to go up and down every 7 minutes, you can because the halves are so short.
I've been up to Twickenham to watch, and it is great fun. And like you say, it's, you know, it that really is an excuse to have a drink.
Well, the Millennium seems like the perfect place to have one of these, but I don't think there will be one. But
no, there isn't.
Because they like somewhere where fans can go. So you've got Cardiff Arms Park next door, which they've used as a fan zone so many times. That seems perfect. You can put a band on and whatever other shit they do. This is my problem, right? Anything, any sport you go to where the sport isn't the highlight of what you're going to do, why are you fucking going to that sport? Like, if you need a band on to go and watch that sport, just go watch a fucking band. Save your money. Like, Sam Fender was on last week. He was fucking great. Why are you going to watch Sevens and then watching some band you've never heard of? For? It's the problem I've got with watching the fucking Super Bowl. Like, anything with the halftime show is better than the actual sport that you're meant to be there for. I went to watch the Rugby League Challenge Cup final. They had fucking Liberty X on at halftime because, no, sorry, wrong way around. They had Mystique on at halftime because Liberty X pulled out and nobody was there to watch fucking Mystique. And this was before Alicia Dixon was massive. So they definitely weren't there to watch fucking Mystique.
I thought they were even a thing.
Yeah, there you go. I'll always remember it because they were there when Leeds lost the Challenge Cup final to Bradford Bulls and I was devastated.
I'm just looking at where the Sevens are now and, yeah, nothing in Wales. London, the only ones in Europe are in Spain and in France and in England and then North America and Dubai. So yeah, they're living where it is.
I've got no real interest in it, if I'm honest. I don't give a shit about Sevens. I mean, I'm okay. I'm not built for Sevens anyway. It's not fun to watch. I played one game on a wing and I was the shittest day I've had in my life. So, yeah, fuck Sevens. I can't. good luck to Richie Poo. Also, it does have the knock-on effect of the Ospreys losing Richie Poo. Will they bring in a defence coach? Will they? Because he was kind of covering everything when he, a la Gethin Jenkins.
Well, I mean, you know who they can't call in now to be defence coach is Byron Haywood, who is now taking over the age grade pathway.
Yeah.
So he's got responsibility for the under-20s and under-18s. And then there's also, you know, Nigel Walker, you know, who, you know, this is what happens. You know, if you put Cardiff people in charge of the WRUs, sometimes stuff gets done, sometimes it's terrible. But with Nigel Walker, you know, at least now we've got a development pathway for the women's as well.
Nigel Walker's done one hell of a job, and this seems like this is like Exeter Chiefs. This is something I say every week as well. Nigel Walker's come in, and you thought, oh, is this job's for the boys? Like, they've brought someone in. What's his? He is absolutely shaking everything up. He has not given a shit about who he's upset. He's told people the way it needs to be done, and it's been done. And you can't fault him for that. Absolutely superb. Like, I love the guy. I love the guy. He's the best hurdler in rugby, if you ask me. He's fucking superb. So, He's done fantastic things. Haywood is a weird one, considering his last job.
He was put into that. I feel sorry for Byron Haywood, I really do, because he did good work with the under-20s previously, and he did some work with Scarlets and with Pivac, and then he was like, come and do this defence job. Yeah, I'm not really built for defence. Oh, don't worry, I'll be fine. Turned out it wasn't.
Well, I wonder, right, because it's very similar this autumn to that autumn, except things were shit back then, right? Whereby they fuck around with everything. They tinkered with everything. They tried untried partnerships. They tried people in different things. They tried different tactics. It was always going to fail. And someone wanted blood for it. And I wondered if they went to Haywood, look, you take the bullet for this. And this job will be waiting for you at the first opportunity to go. As soon as that funding starts coming back, will put you back in a role that you're suited to.
But it seems as well, it just seems to be this kind of panic station. So after the COVID Cup autumn, that was a case of, oh, right, we need to get a defence coach, we need to do this, so he went. And now it's about scrummaging coaches, you know, kind of, and a forwards set-up. Oh, we should get Adam Jones in. He was largely non-committal when I asked him if he would do it, when I saw him at the Harlequins Saracens game. But, you know, it just seems to be a bit of a panic. There's not loads of people out there who can do these jobs.
And the problem is, right, we're not any different to any other time.
No.
I can't remember any time, even under Gatland, that we were dominant in the scrum. I can't remember any time in our history that we were really good at playing Fiji.
In fact, we were finding the scrum up into the point when they took away the really kind of uncontrolled kind of scrummaging part of it, you know, where the minute they become their bind set kind of stuff, that was it, really, you know, because Baum struggled the minute he lost the ability to just get underneath his opposite number and
but even before that, there was the question where people would say, oh, Gethin Jenkins isn't great at scrummaging because he'd get pinged constantly. Wait, that's bullshit. He was great at scrummaging. It was a nonsense. But that got into people's heads that he wasn't very good at scrummaging. And so you talk about that paint in the picture, like the picture was painted before we even stepped onto the pitch. That was too many peas for me. So
same's happening with Carrie now.
Yeah.
I'm guilty of it as well. As Nicky Smith's another one who gets told he can't. Oh, you know, I find Nicky Smith scrummaging, it seems to rub some referees up the wrong way and he'll get pinged for everything.
I don't think Reece Carrie can scrummage, though.
He's been doing decent, you know, coming up decently in the air, you know, although I don't know whether that's just because the whole pack know they're supposed to scrummage according to the, you know, to Alex Corbisiero's analysis of how Wales are scrummaging this autumn, where the way he seemed to describe it, is everyone was trying to scrummage in a completely different direction. And no wonder it started falling down.
Well, it's not Reece Carrie's fault either, is it? You know, I think if you look at the players that Pivac picks, he doesn't seem to like the scrummaging props as much as he likes the ones who can do a decent job in the loose. You know, I like Tom Francis, but he doesn't do a great deal in the loose. Whereas, you know, Dylan Lewis does do more in the loops, but isn't as good a scrummager. And that seems to be where the way Pivac goes with front rows.
And that's the thing. It's the opposite of what Razi was doing, where Razi picks. Obviously, officially, it's not Razi, but Razi picks props who can only scrummage. And like, that's your job when you get on with it. Whereas Pivac wants to. But I think it speaks volumes that the box only just beat us, despite the fact that all their penalties came from that scrum and we weren't scrummaging very well. So it'll come. And like you say, you've got this idea as well. I think the only really the Springboks did us over in the scrum. No one else really battles. We had a couple of bad ones. We also had a couple of good ones.
Fiji got the nudge on against us, which isn't really something you want to be seeing.
I feel like that when they got the nudge, it was on our ball. And I think it was just because you had... Was it? Because one for the Fiji game, it was Basham at eight.
Yeah.
Having, was it probably not played eight since the under-20s? Because obviously, you know, this, you know, Dragons back row, you know, they just seem to field back rows who are all eights.
Yeah, he's done a bit of eight for the Dragons, but not much. You know, Harry Keddie or Moriarty or whoever tends to get slotted in those positions. You know, you're absolutely right, Harley, you know, in terms of. It's easy to say about the Fiji game, they got a nudge on, but you'd hope that...
Let's not underestimate as well how much of a difference is made by the fact we've had to start a whole new second row.
Yeah.
Like, the second row has changed so many times, and then we lost Alan Wynn as well. Corey Hill is off in Japan, not throwing bottles at windows. we've lost important second rows, and that does make a big difference to your scrum. Like that's going to happen as well.
Well, I think that's always underestimated, the importance of second rows in the scrum. You know, we put all the emphasis on front rows and is he a good scrummaging prop or whatever, but you need good scrummaging second rows behind you as well, who are going to give us that forward impetus.
And I think, like we talked about earlier, like making that step up, you talk about making the step up from the Premiership to regional level. That step up from regional level to international level is even bigger. And we've got boys who are just getting used to that and just, you know, and not to mention again, like Wilgriff John, one of the most unlucky players that every time he gets close to having an opportunity, something goes fucking wrong. Because it feels like he's been ready to step into that tight end role and offer us something. And then every time he gets close, he picks up another injury. He seems a little bit cursed. He's almost Aaron Shingler-esque or Will Boyd as well. Like every time the opportunity comes, is another injury for him.
Yeah, I mean, as well, speaking of that, you know, when, you know, even, you know, going back to that South Africa game, you know, South Africa, you know, everyone thought Scotland's scrum was fantastic. They got demolished, arguably, possibly worse. You know, and even when it was when most of the scrum penalties, because all but one of the scrums were in the second half, most of the scrum penalties came with Wynn Jones, you had Wynn Jones, Thomas Francis, and and Will Griff-John. You know, these are supposedly the three best scrummagers in the Wales squad, and they all had a shit time.
And you know, we've seen South Africa do it against everybody. You know, it's the way that they start, and they say it's the way to rise. So I'm not that worried. I think it'll come. And what we've seen from the COVID Cup to the Six Nations, it's why everyone was on about it being a jam slam, because it's because we experimented in the autumn, we wrote off, didn't really give a shit, and then competed in the Six Nations. I'm happy with that. That's the opposite of what Scotland used to do every year, where they'd look fucking like world beaters in the autumn, and then when it became the important games, they'd fall away. So, yeah, I'm not that bothered. Speaking of scrummaging, it's another good link. Speaking of props, Tadhg Furlong is staying in Leinster. You can make as many signings as you want to. Hanging on to Tadhg Furlong is fucking huge, isn't it?
But best prop in the world. I mean, you might even argue one of the best players in the world, because from what he does absolutely everything you want a prop to do, and seems like he can play at 10 and centre as well when he's in the mood.
Well, I wrote down as a note here, best prop in the world with a question. Like, he's got to be, isn't he?
Best forward in the world. Does so much. Gets around the park, scrummages. He's a proper player. But the thing is, as well with Leinster, you know, we can talk about how Irish regions are funded or whatever, but he could earn proper money elsewhere as well, couldn't he? I'm sure he's on a decent amount of money playing for Leinster, no doubt about that, but he could probably double that somewhere else. And it's, you know, as well, we've all seen the video of him talking about the orange spud, so he's a man of relatively simple taste, it would appear.
And that's why he didn't go to France. He could have gone to France, where all he could find was orange spuds and pomme de terre. He doesn't need this in his life. He just wants a good old-fashioned potato.
Oh, God, he's such a good player. If I was Leinster, I would be wrapping him up in bubble wrap whenever he wasn't doing anything rugby-related, because you just want him to stay as long as he can.
Like you talk about, surely he's like the money that they're throwing at Sexton, fucking Johnny Attrick Sexton, like at his age now and looking like he is, like, how much must Furlong actually be worth? I'd be holding at the runs.
I would imagine he has been offered decent money to play in other countries, and I imagine Leinster and the IRFU have. He's probably one of the better paid players in that setup.
If he's not, I want to know who's his agent is, and because he's not. It's the same guy who's doing bloody Brian Abana's cameo videos when he was selling them for like 15 quid. It was less than fucking half the Italian team or whatever it was when we looked into those a month back.
Less than James Haskell.
The money I'd pay to never see or hear from him again.
He got on my tits for something, and I can't remember what it was, so I'll leave it there.
Oh, was it the take that now's the time to take the knee post?
Oh, we did that one. We did that one on the last podcast. Jesus Christ, that was horrific. Yeah, I'm not getting into that again. No. I went on off on a 20-minute rant about poppies as well. The last bit of news that I've got, and I'll sort open if you do about anything, is the rather gruesome tale of Matheu Bastereau's knees. Where he's managed to do ligaments in both. I've only ever known one person do this before. And it was a 6-year-old guy in our rugby club after another 6-year-old guy punched him. And as he tried to step back, did ligaments in both his knees. But nobody realised and thought it was just because he was pissed. And so they forced him into a car by picking his legs up and jamming them in. And then when he went, he had done both and they had to do some sort of reconstructive surgery. He won't be listening because he can't work it out. But if he was, I agree. But he won't be able to work on podcasts. He doesn't know what this is. That's a pretty horrific one, isn't it? I can't get my head on doing... How's he done it? I did a meme a while back when he was still playing for Toulon of him eating a Twister lolly, and the only image I had in my head was him chasing an ice cream van. And it doesn't make sense to anyone bar about the like fucking five people or whatever it was that I had following me at the time. But, yeah.
I saw him when he played for the Barbars in Pivac's first game at... the Millennium Stadium, and I went to that game, and his warming up was one of the finest things I've ever seen. And we were behind where he was warming up, and it was like watching the grassroots 55-year-old prop warming up. He sauntered about a bit. He didn't really run. He juggled a ball. He talked to one of the physios. He drank about 14 litres of water and then sat down for a bit. And I thought, oh, apparently that's what national rugby players do to warm up.
See, I told you you can still make it. You can still do it.
In all fairness, it was the bar, so he's probably trying to rehydrate after the hangover.
Yeah,
probably.
They were in the old arcade until fucking 3 o'clock that morning.
My son kept saying, "Daddy's drinking again." He was literally just throwing water down himself, just bottle after bottle.
That's all I've got. I say that's all I've got. I mean, we've done fucking nearly over an hour and a half of news, but has anyone else got any news?
There's, you know, there's the rumours that Cardiff are going poaching in the regions again for Sanjay. Don't know what truth is, which might be a decent bit of business because Hal Amos is retiring. But I mean, it's just going back to the joke that Gav got told off for with the Tarky backs.
I blame Rhiannon Garth-Jones. That was her fault. She started the tartan back. I loved the meme. I thought it was very good. And as I pointed out at the time, like, it doesn't matter how many second rows you've signed in that time. You still got a weakness in the second rows, especially when some of the ones you've signed are fucked off by. Like, you signed Coriel. He went back.
I think the year we signed Corey Hill, we had George Hill retire. I can't remember who else went to the pro day. And then... He went to Russia. So we've got one international class second row. We'll be here for about 3 weeks. And we've lost another three.
That's the point. It doesn't matter if you've signed second rows. What you've got to do is still have enough second rows, because if lots of others leave, you don't have enough second rows. That said, with Amos retiring, it would, I mean, even if Amos wasn't retiring, let's not fuck around, yeah, because he's a better player than Al Amos is. It would be a fantastic signing anyway.
But they've got loads of back three players. You've got Owen Lane, Summerhill, Josh Adams. You know, there's plenty from there.
I don't think they've got as many back three players as you think they have.
Well, I've only named three, but you know, that's...
I think specifically you've got to look at, like, position, because with Cardiff, really, you don't get too much. I mean, Hal Amos and Summerhill occasionally shift between wing and fullback. They don't have many fullbacks. You know, it's normally just Hal Amos or Matty Morgan. I mean, there's Jacob Beetham, who's properly tearing up the Premiership, who I'm quite excited coming up through the academy. But otherwise, really, I mean, as we said, we spent a lot of time with Gareth Anscombe as our 15 because of the whole, you know, and again with Jockey being back, you know, he likes his dual playmaker at 10 and 15. And, you know, presume they're hoping that, they're hoping that Liam Williams can fill in that void, role.
Matthew Morgan as well, you know, kind of, let's just say Liam Williams is a bit of an upgrade on Matthew Morgan, isn't he? Certainly, you know, it's...
Certainly adds to the physicality.
Yes, he might tackle occasionally.
Yeah, but Matthew Morgan's going to come back from South Africa really pumped up and angry. You can tell from his Twitter. He's ready for this now. He's going to come back an all new man.
So hoping the Boxing Day Derby goes ahead. I said my absolute favourite Matthew Morgan moment I've ever witnessed was I went to the away game at the Liberty against Ospreys, and play had stopped and whatever, and you know, there was a knock on or whatever. And Matthew Morgan goes up to the winger, who's George North, and decides, "I'm going to take you on." Gives him the gentlest. I mean, George North doesn't even move. it's like, "Oh, Nipper, I love you, but you're not the biggest lad." I mean, I've had a photo with him, and he's a few inches shorter than I am, and I'm not a particularly big person either.
He's exciting play with the ball in hand. Are you really exciting?
Oh yeah, I mean, that one try, was it the balls he scored and somehow managed to get through, like, you know, the whole Bulls pack and just dart under the post. And it's like, you know, there's a kind of chance saying, you know, Matthew Morgan, he does what he wants, which is very rarely tackle.
Well, was it Matthew Morgan when he was, the comment came about him having dynamite in his boot? Was it? Hang on. Let me get this straight. Let me get this straight that I'm thinking of the right thing here. Because, yeah, he was when he was at the Ospreys. I'm fairly certain because he went Ospreys Bristol, didn't he?
Yeah.
And am I right in saying he used to take penalties and conversions for the Ospreys, and he kicked one from like fucking 50 yards or whatever. And like, I'm sure it's Phil Steele, so he's got some dynamite in his boot. And whoever was our space coach at the time says, Jamie didn't put some in his shoulders and try and make a tackle. It's one of the best post-match interviews. But yeah, poor Matthew Morgan. But yeah, it would be a great sign-in for the Blues. I think, like, no matter who signs Liam Williams, you know what you're going to get. It's going to be a great sign-in. Whether it is the place that they need to... they need to strengthen or not is another question. But I don't think they've got as many back three players as we think, but it still wouldn't be priority for me.
Even with the, particularly, going back to dipping in the academy, we've got a couple of players who probably can step up. Teddy Williams, someone who looks like, you never know if we can bulk up Max Llewellyn, that'd be interesting to see him in the lineup, going out, following after his dad, but. Other than that, there's some few decent semi-pros who are still young enough you might be able to bring up, and there's things like people like Rhys Anstey who are looking quite promising, although they're probably a bit on the shorter side, but could still do a job. Definitely. Let's get some front five. Let's get some more type fives.
Yeah, desperately need some second row players, I would say, as well of a weakness, but because some of those players are going to get called to internationals and then who's filling in?
Lions 2025 bolter Seb Davis, he's not going to be about much. So,
he's spent so long at Cardiff now, he's evolved into a back row player. Seb Davis has spent so much time around Dyang at Cardiff House Park that he's become a blindside flanker. This is the danger that you've got. It was lucky that it was him. It could have been a scrum half that got sucked in the other way. And suddenly the Mike Phillips effect, he could be another flanker. Another piece of news that I'd forgotten about is that rugby laws are now interchangeable just as long as you can get a game on. So it doesn't matter how many players that you can play at community level, between 10 to 15, just go ahead. A maximum of 40 minutes, but if you want to just play what you like, as long as it's not more than 40 minutes a half, you just crack on with it.
There are a few have been running that for a number of years, or the game on principles. We've been running in grassroots level in the RFU for a number of years. I've played ridiculous 11-a-side games and stuff in the last couple of years.
Well, the weird one is they've said that people can agree whether they will compete at the line-out. That's one of the ones that I like. Well, they go, well, actually, we don't fancy the line out. So, do you mind not line out in?
Nah. I really hate jumping, so I'm going to be pushing for this quite strongly now. Yeah, we're not going to stick for line outs.
I feel like Wally's not here, I should say, and Ryan Elias is still misses, man.
Oh, look.
I have to be fair. He was one of the best players this autumn. I do have to. Eat humble pie on that one. He was excellent.
I have become a Ryan Elias Stan account now, so it's.
I was the OG Ryan Elias Stan account. I'm going to
absolutely. I'm leaping on your tail. He's not taking over from Jonah for me, but he's getting it.
I feel it means more when it comes from a fan of another region. If they start saying, because it's just been the Turk bias. When it comes to you, yeah.
The other news as well, Byron McGuigan's only going to get 3 weeks for a little bit of MMA. He's been training for MMA and sometimes he just forgets where he is and just battles someone, according to Alexander. So one time he was just in Tesco's trying to pick up a Tesco value meal deal, and some old woman got in front of him and she wrestled him for a fucking cheese and onion sandwich or something. Apparently, it's just happening a lot. Sometimes when you're training to be an MMA fighter, it's not true what they say about controlling your rage. sometimes you're in a swimming pool and you just need to beat shit into someone for the last woggle. Like, it just happens. I thought it was the worst defence of anyone assaulted by was to say, well, you know, he's training for MMA. Well, who knows what could happen? Well, if that's his mentality, stop training him to fight.
He probably shouldn't be doing MMA if that's the defence. You know, as I said to you in the pre-record chat, the game has changed. You know, if there is a red card, clearly, but 30 years ago...
That's not what you said. That's not what you said in the pre-record chat at all.
I asked if it was a red card. I didn't say what I felt. But, you know... But the Moriarty brothers would have been sent off every single game because that's essentially all they did. I very rarely saw them with a ball in hand. But no, you know, it's a professional game and that's not how you carry yourself, clearly. And Tompkins, come on.
Tompkins, like I say, he doesn't so well. I don't know whether it's because I think part of it is shit I was in. Like, he clearly, there's not many times you can get dropped on your face and look like the victor. Because morally, and like he's got the man sent off. I don't agree with people saying, well, he kind of deserved that because he ruffled his hair and said something to him. I guess in the same people who, I don't know, there's no way that you can think, it was all right what he did there because he ruffled his hair a bit and he probably called him a dickhead or something. But no, you can't fucking drop someone on their face for that.
No. He's a professional sportsman. He needs to be controlled. You know, it's.
My theory was that Tompkins said to him, and I can still get into a national side and like someone. And that's what set him off.
What, the Scotland Hall of Famer, Byron McGuigan?
Yeah.
Well, this last we heard was that James Askell was going to be the MMA fighter from rugby. I mean, that died to death. And now he's going to be a stand-up comedian, apparently. Byron McGuigan's obviously spotted a gap in the market. He's not very good at punchlines, but he's good at punching Welsh centres. Well, let's be honest, if he wasn't Welsh, probably has got a bit of a punchable face. At very least, he's got someone with a very punchable haircut.
He's got an energy, hasn't he? You know, Tompkins's got an energy about him.
Yeah, it's very Saracens.
Yes, exceptionally.
Yeah, but, you know, he's Welsh and we love him for it. is there any other news that we've missed? I mean, surely there can't be.
Well, the only point I would say, and it's not really news, more my delusional state. I suffer from insomnia and sometimes I'll be reading stuff at ridiculous hours in the morning. I saw something about Andre Pollard moving clubs and I saw a red, white and green shirt and for a brief second I thought he was going to Ebervale.
Are they more chances of signing Sue Pollard than Everville?
Yeah, probably.
I did have that on my list of news, but again, there's not really much we can talk about. It's a great signing. It's very different to what we were expecting from, but very true of very in the style of Kevin Sinfield. Sinfield was that kind of player by bringing sort of other people into the game was the way that he played rugby league. And I think we'll see very similar if they do sign Pollard. It's very much the bigger style of playing, where you bring other people in and you put the kicks in behind and there's never going to be anything magical and fantastic, but everything you do is fucking brilliant at the same time.
Percentage rugby.
Yeah.
But that's exactly how Borthwick wants to play at Tigers. So, you know, he's the perfect fit. I mean, he's one of the, you know, he's basically an inside centre the way he deals with the game physically. He's a very good kicker. Right, his place kicking just seems to have, you know, he seems to have a bit of the yips at the moment, but he's usually a fantastic kicker, decent range. He's going to love playing behind, you know, a pack that, you know, is half South African, so is as bastardy as he's used to. You know, the good rugby sort of bastard. Because we're on Tigers, I do want to go to a segue to a former Tigers player who's also received a ban for that clear out, but even Seb Davis went, oof, that's a bit off. With Thomas Lavanini, he's got a...
Oh, yes!
He's been announced he's had a 5-week ban.
Yeah, that was, but the only thing with that one was the hypocrisy of Peter Omani calling him out as I can't remember the exact word, scum. He called him scumbag. And you got Peter Omani, we've seen that exact clear out from you many times before.
It was a cheap shot though by Lavanini.
It was a cheap shot. 100% it was a cheap shot. But then remember, didn't Peter Omani get sent off last season for dropping an elbow on a Scarlets player on Jake Ball?
I think it was a different kind of thing, though. With Lavanini, if he saw the ball, he's clearly got the greatest vision of any human being because you couldn't see the ball.
I mean, but the Peter Omani one was after a try.
Oh, yeah.
He was a player on the floor after Munster had scored.
Yeah,
and
no,
he just...
I forgot about that incident. I thought you were talking about the Wales Island game. No, yeah. No,
the one where he was like fucking Macho Man Randy Savage off a top rope. We just got to him with an elbow drop on Jake Ball's face. And if I remember rightly, that was only given a second yellow.
Yeah.
It's fucking madness. So, yeah, of all the... It's slightly hypocritical, that's all I say.
Little.
We'll move on then and wrap it all up with winners and wankers. As we always do. So, Gav, who's your wanker for this week?
Lots of options, I think. But I'm going to pitch it on anyone who thinks that the situation in South Africa with Cardiff and Scarlett is an excuse to have a go at Dirk. It's not. It's not a goal. It's a terrible situation for those group of players, and it's nothing to do with the league. It's to do with the world in which we currently live.
Ali?
Yeah, in a similar vein, mine's just for all the, you know, as soon as Cardiff Rugby brought out the statement saying, you know, they're suffering from mental health, all the pricks who started saying, you're in a nice hotel, you know, it's like, clearly, you know, you're talking about about people with proper mental health issues. You clearly don't know anyone who has them, because they'll tell you it's, you know, even the smallest happy situations, you know, if your brain's telling you it's a shit situation.
Yep.
You can't convince your brain otherwise. And it's, you know, and anyone who's got the, speaking of like the people complaining about the IRC, some of the South African Twitter accounts are complaining because, and saying, oh, we could have still played the game if they can't get out till the Sunday. Like, no, because the whole idea of them going straight into this lockdown bubble is so they can leave. If they do the game, then they've got a lockdown for a further week or so with even more testing. And then we just end up putting it back. There was no point playing the games.
Yeah, the mental health thing is massive. I know it's a drum that I bang on a regular basis, and obviously it's something quite close for me. But like, people saying, like, playing it down. There was someone as well today who said... if this is the kind of people that our academy's created, they're not even mentally strong enough. Fuck that guy. Like, honestly.
That would boil my piss.
Yeah, that doesn't make you fucking weak having mental health issues. Like, fuck you. And it can't be bred. You can't breed mental health issues. Like, if you've got mental health issues, You can do your best to counteract those, to try and manage those, and try and live with those. But fuck you. And then people who are using it as an opportunity to slag off. And, like this is a... I'm glad this is recorded because this is a momentous occasion, right? People are using this to slag off Cardiff. Fuck those guys as well, because I'd be pissed off if I was locked in a room. If I was locked in a room in this country, it'd be bad enough. If I was locked in a room in another country, not knowing when I could get out of that country and knowing full well that when I get out of that country, I've got to get locked in another fucking room. Yeah, it's going to have an effect. And yeah, I'm going to be pissed off. And yeah, occasionally I'm going to lash out at the wrong people. Don't have a go, people, for them trying to get out. Like, for them saying, oh, well, we just want to work with governments to get us out of here because we're stuck in a fucking hotel room. And regardless of whether that's a 5-star hotel or that's a fucking Airbnb somewhere, right, it's hard. It's fucking hard. So people who are using this as an opportunity to have a go at the Blues, fuck them. Fuck the disciplinary committee who decided Barry McGuigan should get 3 weeks. They're wankers as well for me this week. But my number one wanker this week is Joe Marler. Because on the back of the old Razzie conversation and him doing a documentary and then Sonny McLaughlin saying, well, they shouldn't be allowed to do this. This is ridiculous. Someone needs to stop this. He then done a little bit of whataboutery to Sonny for that interview where she asked Owen Farrell a few times about whether he thought the referee was wrong in the Six Nations and England saw their arses over it. And she took a lot of abuse and a lot of misogynistic shit. And for Joe Marler to try and dig that back up in a situation that is absolutely in no way similar to what she's talking about, fuck Joe Marler. So my number one wanker for this week is Joe. And then, because we're all happy and shiny, we'll finish on winners. Who's your winner, Ali?
I mean, I've got a couple, and it's nothing. It's not on the
men's. You're better than me. I didn't have a couple.
It's not on the men's yet. So, first of all, the whole women's barbarians team. I mean, to name an individual, Simi Pan, because she's amazing in every way. But that game was absolutely fantastic. That was exactly what you wanted a barbarians team game to be. Silly trick plays, go for the corner. Just lots of people playing with a smile on their face, and as ever, and a perennial winner of every week as long as I live is Jazz Joyce for just being fantastic at sevens and proving that Wales do produce some of the best rugby players in the world. It's just that we don't. Pivac never plays them.
I don't think we can blame Pivac for not playing Jazz Joyce.
I blame Pivac this week.
I'm pretty sure there's certain laws in place with that. Gav,
I still reckon she'd do a job.
I'm not doubting for a second she couldn't. I think she'd be absolutely great. We could have called her non-Evans, would have been our best player in the 90s as well. Gav, your winner for this week?
My winner is Ulster Rugby. For a brief second, suggesting there could be a possibility of a not crushingly depressing Sharks versus Leinster final. For that brief second, could we? But I know that's what's going to happen. But for that 80 minutes, I dreamt the dream that Leinster wouldn't be in the final.
Well, Ulster are better now because they've got a Welshman in the team now. That's what it is. They've got a Welshman in their squad, and suddenly they look a better team. And also, Ulster for giving Harley the chance to laugh publicly. Yes, his face.
To be fair, that was Connor who did
that. Oh, of course it was. Sorry, wrong way round.
If we are on about that, one other winner just to make Yesin happy for me has got to be Jack Morgan, because he made it much better for the Ospreys than it was. And what Pivac sees that he isn't playing right, because for me he's probably our closest replacement to Navidi. In terms of just the sheer work rate and both sides of the ball, just cleaning up so much shit.
He's been fantastic. He was great at the Scarlets. He's gone to the Ospreys and gone up another level again. Like, he's going to grow into... He's our future seven. Like, there's no doubt about it. And I did say I hope that this, because Pivac are trying to handle youngsters well, that he wasn't included in the squad, because he deserves to be. And I hope it's only because we're slowly bringing players through rather than dropping them in at the deep end is kind of the reason why, hopefully. My winner for this week is Semiran Randa, because he's back, because it feels like it's been forever. And as a suffering short-time Bristol fan, I will say, because I've not been a Bristol fan since their last year in the Championship, but as a short-term Bristol Bears fan, my God, I know, like, there's no Ben Earl and there's no Max Malins, and that's hurt us a lot. But Semi coming back is a massive one, and I can't wait to see him this week.
Just having an actual centre would be great. I say, because I sort of adopt, when I moved to England, I adopted Bristol as my team, mainly because there just seemed to be so many Welsh people in it. But I live in a small East Devon village, so obviously it's proper Chiefs country, and oh God, it's insufferable. I mean, and it's not like they've got anything to shout about either. As soon as you take away the 14-man latch, they're screwed.
So Sammy's my winner for this week, because it's great to finally see him back on the pitch, because without a doubt, when he's fully fit, like, he's one of the best players in the world and one of the most exciting players in the world as well. So yeah, Semiran Randa is my winner for this week. I was struggling for winners. I don't know what's wrong with me. I've gone all droopy D on everything this week. It was nice to come out and rant. And on that note, all that's left is for me to thank Ali. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, Gal, for stepping in and co-hosting this one.
More than happy to.
And thanks to you for listening. Cheers. Bye now.
Bye.
You've been listening to Ruck and Roll. If you've stuck with us this far, leave us a review, follow us, Not Just You, go on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook and TikTok, and drop us a message. We're a pretty friendly bunch. It'll be great to hear from you no matter what you want to say. And we'll see you next time. Thanks very much for listening. Bye for now.